Access number 11938, reel 42.
Mr. G. Eyston, reel 42. How long were you in the old Alamein line, Mr. Eyston, training, clearing the battlefield?
Something like 17 days. You see, this was like training a new unit again. The 7th we'd done it in 3 years. We even did embussing and debussing and all this sort of thing that we'd done now for 7 times in a short period of time, in 3 years, because we'd have these new intakes. We finally got on the move again on the 2nd of December. Well, we went through the Alamein line again to the coast road. The carriers went on transporters this time because we were really going to do a long trip, and we really expected going to El Agheila, which is on the south of Benghazi. The second day out, just as we got to Mirza Matruh, we had terrific thunderstorms, really sodding thunderstorms, and I didn't get in till the following morning because we were trying to drag vehicles out. And for all we'd done all the training on the desert and in the soft sand, drivers hadn't experienced this. To be honest, I hadn't experienced much of this wet, muddy, slithery carry-on. But I'd had some experience, and I'd had enough experience in snow in England, so I had a good idea what it is, the same sort of situation. There's a thing about this, you see, that very often, if you're in this sort of slush and mud, bottom gear is probably the worst thing you can do. That is, put it in the lowest gear, because then the engine has too much bite. It just spins the wheels. If you can take it in a higher gear, second or maybe even third gear, it puts more strain on the engine, more strain on the transmission, more strain on everything. But it means that the engine hasn't got the same bite at the wheels, and it means that you've got a bit of flex between the engine and the wheels, and that little bit of flex will sort of ease it rather than turn the wheel and spin it. It's difficult to describe. It's a torsion, in fact, where you've got the engine at a sort of a low power. It's hard to understand that an engine in third gear, the engine is lower powered than it is when the engine's in bottom gear. And the torque between the engine and the wheels is less, really. So, yes, you might stall the engine. In fact, that is the time when it just starts to move, when the engine is stalling more or less, and you can very often get a vehicle away just like that. We tried the sand mats, the sand, you know, the metal sand mats. We used those. There's quite a lot of digging to be done. I did explain before that we use maybe 3 toe-to-end. We put 2 vehicles on, try and find them a bit of a hard spot, put 2 vehicles on, 1 at each corner, and try and drag them round or whatever we could. But we really hit it. We did 78 miles that day, but as I said, it was next morning before I got into the camp. And you see, the thing is that the further behind the column you are, the worse it's getting, because somebody's already made a cart rut in front of you. So if you're trying to go along in a fairly high gear and hoping that you're going to stop on top of it, you've got to go into somebody else's ruts, so you get stuck.
So the road surface...
There was no road. There was no road. We were on the desert at this particular time. We were on the desert. And well, the road was kept clear for people who had to get up, and for stores still going up. You see, Tobruk could take a fair amount of stores in, but Tobruk Harbour had really been knocked around on more than one or three occasions. Tobruk Harbour had been bombed, and our own Air Force hadn't done Tobruk any good while Rommel was there. They'd had a once we started getting air superiority, they had a real go at Tobruk. So Tobruk Harbour was a long time before that got into go. And so we were in the desert to allow supplies on the road.
Travelling in the desert, was it behind each other, or were you?
No, we tried to in the Alamein line, of course. When we moved off that day, we had to be in line. But wherever we could, and we're sure there were no minefields or anything like that. You see, now there's a scare of where are minefields. There's so many about that it's difficult to know where people had laid mines, even on the border. You know, right down the border it was mined, and you've got to be very careful that you hit a minefield, you see. So there was a signal, I forget how it was done now, but there was a signal where the navigator put a flag up, and that would sort of stop the unit as it was. It would continue, and then the unit went into line astern to get through minefield gaps in minefields and things like that.
Was this a kind of arrowhead travelling with the navigator at the point?
There's always a navigator at the point, but generally we're travelling in our box formation, so we're in practice again in case anything should happen. We got into the box formation with the guns, the anti-tank on the side, and the machine guns. Forget who was with us just then. I don't know. In fact, I don't recall machine guns at that particular time. Taking the corners and so forth. We hadn't the artillery, of course. They were away keeping up with the advancing troops.
How many hours did you travel, or what kind of time did you travel non-stop?
Well, the battle had got so far away from us at this time that we were allowed to use lights. We could have fires all night, so there was no fear of the cooks having to wait for dawn before they started to make a meal. The battle was so far away from us, and we had so much air supremacy at this time that it was like being back in Civvy Street again. I mean, fires any time we liked, and as much light as we needed. Even some of the vehicles were fitted up with lights. I mean, they hadn't had lights on for, well, I doubt if some of them have had lights on, but we fitted some of them up so that we could travel after dusk if necessary. But it was the rain that stopped us. The third day out, we just parked up and gave it up. The following day, about the fourth, we got on the move again, and we went right across the desert on the Siwa Oasis Road, which is right in the south as far as battles went. The Siwa Oasis was well south. I went down there and then up to Bertalata in Burr Shefferson and El Adam. We stayed at El Adam about the fifth, sixth night out. And in fact, I think we had a day at El Adam because we sort of topped our stores up with everything that we could from Tobruk. El Adam is just nicely south of Tobruk. I think we had a day there and then sort of replaced our stocks and carried on again the following day. On the 10th we went to a place called Bur Bukrimisia, which is just nicely west of El Adam. And there we stayed for a while and we did exercise with the 50 RTR. Now the 50 RTR I don't know why, whether it was given to us as because we were 50 div, I don't know, but the 50th Tank Regiment seemed to be with us for quite a few occasions now. We had them on the El Alamein, in the second battle of El Alamein, and I believe they were there on the first one, but they never got a chance to come forward. While we're here, we had quite a nasty little clash with an Italian division, and they had a big dump, store dump, in a wadi similar to the one I tried to describe we had in Alexandria, where you went through this, it was very similar, except it went east to west, whereas the other one was south. You went through this, there were big hills, very high hills, similar sort of place to where I described about the tank chasing us when we were on our way back from, in fact, come to think of it, could easily be in the same place. Anyway, we must have had wind that there was somebody in there, because we went in very cautiously, but the road went through it, the road we were going to take actually went through this place, and the battalions, we didn't lose many, but they had quite a battle in there, because we just had infantry, you see, we had our anti-tank guns, but really speaking, it was infantry again that had to go in and do the damage with the bayonet and the rifle.
So this action took place in effect way behind the
Yes, the line then I think was round about El Agheila, sort of some 120 miles away. This was El Arim, not far from El Arim.
So they must have been missed by the advancing forces.
They'd been missed completely, and they'd hung out in there, and I don't know what they intended doing. It was quite a big dump. In fact, it was in that I got my three-wheeler motorbike. Motor Guzzi. It was one wheel at the front, two at the back with a box on. It was ideal for me for throwing my gear in, my tools in, and one or two bits of spares. Because then I could wander around if it was in column, I could wander up and down it without having to sort of get too far off the road or too far into a minefield or anything like that. It was a really handy thing. The two wheels at the back drove. It had like a diff in and a chain around it, and the two wheels at the back drove. So it had quite a good driving thing.
About what date would this action take place?
Well, we were there about 15 days altogether. In fact, we had Christmas Day there. And we were doing quite a few exercises with the tanks. And we must have got word that these people were in there. And it was quite a nasty little battle while it, hand-to-hand stuff. Eventually we quietened it down, and we got in, and there was a whole mass of stuff again. We took one or two bits that we fancied, and I got me a little three-wheeler that I really liked. And I rode it quite a long way until almost to Benghazi, when the weather turned really rough. And then I had to slip it onto the back of a truck then. And with getting one or two trucks to go, we had one or two spares, you see, so it was easy enough just to throw me three-wheeler on it.
When did you get to Benghazi?
Well, we didn't get that until the 6th of January. We had Christmas Day at this again, El Arim. And then we still carried on with the training. In fact, on Boxing Day, everybody did a 9-mile route march. I suppose this was really to get after riding for about 10 days or something like that, it was really to get the circulation going again. And we moved off again on the 1st of January, and again, after 3 days, the weather came down again. Now, this was a real humdinger. It rained solidly for 2 days, And again, we're on the desert, and you see, we're trying to cut across the desert. We've got to try and cut Cyrenaica out completely and whip away from sort of south of Tobruk, right south to El Agheila, more or less in a straight line. But oh, this was a real humdinger, a real electric storm, and we're bogged down for another day. It was just impossible. And it was decided that we'd try and get back to the coast road. And eventually, on the 7th of January, we got to Benin there, which is about 4 or 5 miles east of Benghazi. There was a very big aerodrome there. And on a slope, the aerodrome was at the top of the slope, and then there was the coast road. And then we were on a good slope and down. The water had a chance to run away from us, but getting there it was really serious. In fact, the storm was so bad that there was 4 ships sunk in Benghazi harbour just as it got it nicely opened out to supply the troops, which put Benghazi out of production altogether. So then I don't know whose idea it was, whether it was Monty's or it was Horrocks, because we were in 10 Corps again then. Horrocks had gone forward a long way, I think, I think he'd gone as far as El Agheila, and then he'd dropped out, and 30 Corps had taken over to go up the Tripolitanian coast. Anyway, we were grounded. 10 Corps was grounded completely, because they took all the transport away as far as possible. And each battalion formed a platoon of 20 vehicles, 23 tonners. And so that gave the brigade, 151 Brigade, a company, sort of an RSC company, or what would look like an RSC company, of 3 platoons of 20 trucks, like 60 trucks. And we did the run from Tobruk. Some stuff came to Benghazi, some to El Agheila, some to Addis Ababa, and some to El Agheila. We were just like RSC, running from Tobruk, from the big dumps at Tobruk, because Tobruk Harbour got opened out again by then, and they had quite big stocks. We were carrying mainly petrol, occasionally food, and very occasionally with naffy supplies. But we used to meet up now and again if somebody had good food on, the box would go astray. Actually, we had everything we wanted. There was plenty of beer, there was plenty of anything, really.
And you were acting in this case as a driver?
Frankie Hanley was sort of leading the column. He was the corporal, MT corporal. He was leading the column, and I was bringing the rear up. We're both driving, or spelling driving, if you like. What used to happen was that we'd send our driver off onto another vehicle. If things were going nicely, we'd send our driver off to another vehicle to spell the drivers all the way through. And of course, the same thing happened if our driver would come back, and then we'd have a noddy in the spare man's seat.
But you were acting as a...
I was acting as fitter.
Fitter with the column.
With the column, yeah. Anybody broke down. And I must say that the lads did very, very well. We hadn't a lot of problem. Occasionally, we'd find that 2 platoons were in the depot at the same time. And they weren't long loading, mind. It was all handled, chain gang style, hand to hand. But they weren't very long loading. And if 2 happened to get there at the same time, then we'd get a bit of maintenance done. At night, we'd try and catch up with it. But we didn't have a lot of trouble. In fact, you see, using the coast road, it was very convenient. We'd try and stop somewhere near one of the little villages, which are just down the bank. There are very few villages on the coast road, but just down the bank towards the coast, like Derna, was about 120 miles from Tobruk. Well, that was ideal, you see. You could get a load on. We'd drive even in the dark, if necessary, to get to Derna. Then we'd park up, lager up, one of the 2 lads would be on guard, and then a few of us would slip down to the little village and see what there was. Derna hadn't been very badly damaged. There wasn't many people there, but there was a couple of cafes still open. And you know, daft as it seems, for all we had all this food, as much good food as we wanted, it's still nice to go to a cafe now and again and get something done for you. I suppose to see a pair of legs, really. But
moving amongst the native population this way, did you take rifles with you?
No. No.
You didn't have any problems?
No. And we had rifles on the vehicles. And they were, as far as possible, when we weren't driving, there was always a place in the vehicle for your drive rifle to stay. And it was strapped in the vehicle. But as far as possible, if we're going off like this, the guards would know that the rifles had been underneath most of the big 3-tonner holes in. And a few rifles go in there nicely. If anything happened, we'd have been in trouble right enough. But the natives were apprehensive, I suppose you might say. They weren't anti-British in any real sense, but at the same time you had to be wary. The problem we did find was, are there any soldiers in among them hiding as natives? That was one of the things that kept going through your head. You know, if you see a bloke about military age, you know, what the hell's he doing here? And that was one of the problems. But mainly they were just old men. Sometimes his wife would be with him, and sometimes there'd be, well, not young girls, but there'd be women there as well. You see, Derna, most of these villages, they hadn't really been in the fighting line, for all we say were at Derna. It wasn't really in the fighting line. It was a little village down the bank, again the coast, off the coast road. So really, a lot of them had been protected. I mean, Tobruk and Mirza Matru, I mean, they were non-existent, really. Some of the places had really been hammered. Benghazi, when we did get there, that was in a real old shambles. The RAF had really sorted that out. So we'd have a little night out, another night if we were way out and somewhere where there wasn't a village. Frankie would get his accordion going and we'd have a few beers and a sing song. But you see, we were driving. We didn't have a lot of spare time. If we weren't driving, we wanted to sleep. But there was just the odd occasion where maybe for some reason we hadn't had a very hard day and we'd have an hour or so.
Did you sleep in the trucks?
No, at the side as a rule, because the trucks were loaded. On the way back, we were going back empty, we'd sleep in the trucks. But
that means just lying under the truck, or did you have
to the
tent?
Side? No, just to the side of the truck. As I've said many a time, I was always the devil for cutting sheets, tarpaulins and things like that. So we used to, well, it was a kind of a tent, but not a tent as a tent. We used to build things up that we sleep in, because we didn't know where we were going to keep down. I mean, we might go for days and not stop. When we got loaded, we never knew where we were going until we were loaded. And then we'd say, well, your column's going to so-and-so. It might be to Benghazi, it might be Adi Jabe, or it might be to Elagheila. No, Elagheila was something like 1,300 miles. A round trip. It was 1,300 miles.
Were there established petrol dumps and like petrol stations?
We were driving in mainly to establish.
They'd been established on the road.
Yes, you see, we'd bring stuff up to Benghazi, you know, that supplied the whole of that area, and then Adi Jabe supplied another area. Elagheila was sort of the forward dump at that particular time, for all the troops were a lot further on, but that was more or less the forward main dump. Then the RSC were carrying the core troops were carrying it further up to wherever the battle was going. Now, Cyrenaica, when you leave Tobruk and you go along so far and you get through Derna into North Cyrenaica, in particular where the coast road goes, it's a different type of country to the desert. And it is one of the places where Mussolini really did a good job of settling his Italians. He shipped them over there. And Cyrenaica, of course, in Roman days, was sort of the wheat bread for the Romans. It was like Russia, the steppes in Russia was the wheat bed for the Russians. But Cyrenaica was quite a lovely little spot. And going down towards just past Benghazi, Barchi was a beautiful little spot. It was palm trees and goats walking in, and that hadn't been too badly damaged, and there was still population there. Not a lot, but there was still some population there. The farmers, I think, were still looking after the little plots. One of the things about the north of Cyrenaica that struck me was they had agricultural depots, as you might say. Well, not horticultural depots, I would say, with small tractors, which I was interested in, having been in the market garden business. I was interested in these small track-laying tractors to go in a garden, which were unusual in Britain. In fact, tractors weren't... there wasn't a lot of tractors in Britain at that time, but these things did intrigue me, and I spent quite a bit of time on one of them. I can't remember which one now, looking through this depot. It was an interesting spot.
Well, there were Italian civilians in this area.
Yes.
And how were you getting on with those?
We had no trouble at all. No trouble. Again, I said, there's always where, if you saw somebody who was a bit young, who showed a military age, you're a bit wary, but wondered why. But he might have been a Libyan, you know, he might have been a native of Libya. But the majority of them had been brought across from Italy and settled. And they had lovely white houses on the roadside. They were, I'm saying houses, it was more or less one room. What would it be, sort of 10 by 20 or something like that, 10 feet by 20 feet, single story. The goats went in, everything went in, just like you read in the Bible, really. But they were white, and they looked really well.
There were no problems between soldiers who not had women for so long and these civilian women in the area?
No, I don't think so. Not that I can recall, anyway. I think there was a bit of a fraternisation thing where everybody was more or less instructed how far they could go. Friendly, not aloof. Oh. Although there were families left in this place, there didn't seem to be a lot of younger ladies. Maybe they'd been drawn back with the troops who had gone into Tunis by this or towards Tripoli by this time. In fact, when we got to Tripoli, we didn't see a lot of them either, funnily enough. Whether the younger people thought they were better travelling back with the Germans and Italians, or, I don't know. Mostly the people were older. And they were obliging enough, as far as I was concerned. There was very little trouble. I think there was sort of a generation gap here. We'd find some young children and old people, but the... Well, naturally, the military-age people, they'd be taken off by the forces, so they wouldn't be there, would they? The people that should have been attractive, they wouldn't be there. So we were travelling on this, and we did it for 5 weeks. We started delivering 3 tons a day from Tobruk up the line and finished up doing 600 tons a day. As the scheme started, the Corps commander decided he would make a competition of it, and the company that sort of won this competition would get perks. And the 151 Brigade finished third out of the 16.
So was this based on how much carried? How much?
It was all sorts. The driving, the standard of driving. Obviously, you had people watching us on the road to see that it was done properly. The amount of carried and the state of the vehicles. and there's all sorts came into it. And the winning company were allowed to put on the steering wheel with the laurel round. It's similar to the driving thing that a driver mechanic has on his arm. But we finished third. We're quite pleased with ourselves, really. Derna was a lovely little village. But I think the one that really took my eye was Barshe. And that was on the north end, northeast end of a narrow gauge railway, which ran sort of from Barshe through Benina to Benghazi, and then on to south to Solak. And it was a place with palm trees and just a little farming village, an interesting little place. And we tried to stop there one or two nights, but really it was too close to Benghazi to be happy, because I mean if people got to know we're stopping there regularly, there'd have been some inquiries, no doubt. So from Barshe, we went on a bit further, and then went down the Tokra Pass.